Today we'll start with Luke chapter 24. Luke 24, and this is Luke's account of these certain women that go to the tomb who had followed Joseph of Arimathea previously, 3 days before, on that Thursday evening, and went with him to the tomb. We get all this from verse 55 of Luke 23. And so they knew which tomb Jesus was buried in, and they witnessed him preparing his body for the grave. And obviously then, that's how they knew that Jesus had not been fully prepared in the embalming process. And so then they go home and they prepare spices to finish the job on the first occasion that they're able to do, which is going, they're going to have to miss 2 days. They can't do it on the Friday because that's the Passover, and they can't do it on the Saturday because that's the ordinary Sabbath. So Sunday morning is the very first opportunity that these women have to finish this embalming process that the Jews did. Now, as we mentioned last week, well, as Kaufman mentioned, and we covered it last week, that I'd never heard of or realized, but there are many people all through the centuries, Kaufman said, that accused these women of going to the wrong grave, and that's why they didn't find Jesus' body. That his body would have been there, but they went to the wrong grave because they didn't know what grave it was. Well, Luke's account completely obliterates that false claim, because in verse 55, "And the women who had come with Jesus from Galilee followed after Joseph of Arimathea, and they observed the tomb and how Jesus' body was laid." So they did not go to the wrong grave, and that's why they didn't find Jesus' body. And so that is a complete false claim. And we get a list of some of these women in verse 10 of 24. Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James. This is James the Less. And then the other women with them. And so we get a list of some of who these are in this account. But anyway, we will start with Luke 24, verse 1. "Now on the first day of the week," so we know this is on Sunday, "very early in the morning," and we know from the other accounts, I think John namely, that this is at dawn, "they and certain other women with them came to the tomb bringing the spices which they had prepared." And this, we get in verse 10, we get the naming of who some of these certain women are. And verse 2, "But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. Then they went in and did not find the body of the Lord Jesus." Okay, Kaufman's comment on this. First, he gives a summary of this chapter that I'll read. This is the final chapter of Luke, briefly summarizes the astonishing and perplexity of finding the empty tomb, giving the experience of the Galilean women through verse 12, then giving a full account and vivid summary of an appearance of Jesus to the disciples on the road to Emmaus, and that's the middle section of this chapter. Luke then recounted the appearance of Jesus to the 11 and them that were with them, including the disciples returned from Emmaus. And then Luke concludes with a summary statement of Jesus' last words and a brief account of the ascension. Okay, in his comments on these first three verses, and about the stone rolled away. The seal on the grave placed there by the Roman government had obviously been broken, which would have required a commission from the governor's office to investigate it. Furthermore, the military authorizes, the military authorities would have thoroughly investigated the fantastic lie of the guard concerning what happened while they were asleep. And with the activities of the Lord's followers beginning at the crack of dawn the same day and increasing as the day progressed, all of these things made the day of Jesus' resurrection one of the busiest days in history. The Sanhedrin bribed the soldiers to lie about what had happened, for they had witnessed some of the phenomena attending the resurrection and attempted to cover up the truth with lies. So they knew, and well, I could say that there's clues, but it's outright statement. Jesus ends up telling them that he knows that they realize that he's the Messiah, and that ultimately is why this Sanhedrin and the Pharisees want to kill him. And so, as a result, they end up wanting to cover up all of these miracles, at least this miracle, the greatest of all the miracles. They could not cover up the sun going dark for 3 hours in the afternoon, from noon to three, and they could not cover up the earthquake that broke big boulders in two. They could not cover up then people that had previously died resurrecting themselves and coming out of the grave and going into Jerusalem and being seen by many people. They couldn't cover any of that up. They could not cover up the veil of the temple being cut from top to bottom. But they did their best to cover this up here. So they bribed the Roman soldiers. And about the comment or the phrase, "and they did not find the body," the empty grave of Jesus, along with the undisturbed grave clothes within, proved the resurrection of Jesus to be a fact. But to minds so long schooled against any possibility of a resurrection from the dead, it was a fact which the women at the time could not fully believe. Okay, are there any comments or questions on these first three verses?
So were the soldiers already gone by then?
Yes, yes. The women, Mary Magdalene, none of the women, none of the apostles, they never saw. The soldiers were already gone. So this was sometime before dawn that this happened, that the angel rolled the stone away and astonished, shocked these soldiers. And then they obviously looked in and saw that Jesus' body was gone. The grave clothes were still there in a three-dimensional shape that Jesus had been occupying them in, but his body was gone. So then these soldiers leave, and they go to the Sanhedrin and say, well, the body is gone, but now they'd already previously warned these soldiers and Pilate that his disciples are probably going to try to steal the body. But then the report that these soldiers came back with is, well, I don't know what happened. They did not steal the body because his grave clothes are still there in the shape that he occupied them in. And so they did not carry his body out. Plus, we were standing there the whole time, and it was some, I don't know what they would have characterized them being, Roman pagans. I don't know if they would have thought some god or angel, whatever. However, they would have seen it, some divine being more than a human, rolled this stone away. So these soldiers knew what happened. But anyway,
So he resurrected himself before the stone was rolled.
Yes, he was gone. That's right. He was gone when, that's right. Jesus, sometime in the night, left. His body maybe dematerialized.
Yeah.
Whatever, it'll be some kind of science fiction term. He was beamed out or something from Star Trek or something. But it was his body just disappeared. And then the angel rolls the stone away. And the soldiers witness all of that. And now when these women show up, then that's when they see the angel. And the angels talk to them and tell them, go tell the apostles. Then Peter and John come back. And then they see two men, but these are angels that are inside the tomb. Anyway, that's when all of these, but you know, Jesus was gone when the stone was rolled away. He'd already resurrected. And then none of these disciples or the women, they did not see any of the soldiers. They were already gone. Already had gone back to the Sanhedrin to tell them that something miraculous has happened here. And anyway, the Sanhedrin pays them off and tells them, just say that you were asleep. That all of you, and who knows how many there were, 5, 10, 20. It was something to fight off these 11 apostles or more that could come in. So you could think, you know, 20, maybe even 50. But some number, and they said, you tell them that you're asleep. But now, what is the penalty for sleeping while you're on post?
Death.
A death. Death. And that was their penalty as Roman soldiers. And so that's what they bribed them enough. Now, Kaufman's comment on that is, they paid the soldiers money to lie, and then the Sanhedrin had to then go to Pilate, maybe ultimately, but also may had to have gone to whoever their commander was and say, let this go. Do not prosecute these soldiers. We told them to say, anyway, they covered everything up. So these soldiers were not put to death for doing what the Sanhedrin paid them to do. Well, yes. Well, and then the first Gentile that becomes a Christian was a centurion. Was a centurion. Was a soldier himself. So I would think, you would almost think who would be the first ones that he and his household would go to evangelize. I would think very likely his own fellow soldiers.
Yeah.
And then especially these that witnessed these very same things.
Yeah.
Or witnessed these things, these very soldiers here. And the ones that we covered from last week that said, certainly this was a righteous man, certainly he was the Son of God. They were convinced, even from their pagan upbringing, with just seeing these few miracles that they witnessed in that short amount of time. That convinced them. Now, how sad and what was wrong with the Jews then that witnessed the same things and they did not. In fact, it just hardened the Sanhedrin's hearts even more. And I think that was, in fact, that's what Jesus' parable of the unjust servants, of the wicked servants, about that God goes away for a long time and then he sends these different prophets and they kill them all. And then God says, well, at last I will send my son and surely they will listen to him. And then these vineyard workers said, hey, here is the heir of the kingdom. If we kill the heir, we will be the ones that inherit the kingdom. So I think you're right. This was all about power. They were afraid that, well, and this part was true. The law of Moses was ended, and so their power was ultimately ended. Now, they got to go ahead and God allowed them to play like they were in power for the next 40 years. And then the hammer was brought down in Rome. God had Rome come in and completely obliterate everything in Jerusalem, temple and all. And so they know they lost their power, but from their history records, they didn't lose their power till 70 AD. Ultimately, they lost it 30 AD, 40 years earlier. He gave them 40 years to repent. And I also think there was another reason why God gave 40 years. They kept the genealogies in the temple, the records. And if the temple had been destroyed just soon after 30 AD, just right after these events here, well, then they needed time to write the New Testament and to make copies and disseminate it amongst the people, and then for people to be able to verify, go into the temple, that these genealogies were correct. So I think that is also a major reason why God was very patient with the Jews for 40 more years. That also gave time for them to verify both Jesus and Mary's lineage to prove that Jesus was in the line of David and from Judah. So I'm confident that at least those two reasons for 40 years. Otherwise, you think, well, it was all ended in 30 AD, so really it should have all been removed. The temple and all should have been gone right after Jesus resurrected, because it was done for at Jesus' cross that ended the Old Covenant and the Law of Moses. But I think these are reasons why God gave them 40 more years, time to process all this. Now, for the most part, he just hardened their hearts even more. But anyway, God tried. He gave them the opportunity. Yes, Glenn.
He also said that gospel has to be preached in all the world. And then
Yes, and so that happened in about 25 years. So in the neighborhood of what they think, about 55 A.D. from 30 A.D., then the gospel had been preached to every human. They didn't all believe, but they all had heard, Paul tells us. Every human under heaven. Every human under the sun. So that is the whole globe, not just this region that most even commentators think. This is every human that was alive, is what Paul tells us, that had heard. They didn't all believe, but they had the opportunity to hear about the good news of the gospel, that God had established his kingdom. He sent his son to earth, sacrificed himself for the purpose of establishing his kingdom, for the forgiveness of all of humanity's sins. And so they at least heard that, even though they didn't all believe, Paul tells us.
But after the temple
veil
was torn, the temple was still standing.
Yes.
Until 70 AD.
That's correct.
So they were still sacrificing.
They continued the sacrifices.
God was no longer in the Holy of Holies.
That's right. And now, I don't know, and I've not heard or anything, if they replaced that veil. I don't know. They could have either mended it or got a new veil and replaced. And I would really think that probably they did, and they continued. Otherwise, here there was no division. They couldn't let that stand, even though God was no longer there, whatever, like he was beforehand. That was all done over, but they were still playing like it was real. But even in their history, they account that they gave the sacrifices until 70 A.D. In 70 A.D., the sacrifices ended and stopped. And the Ark of the Covenant, you got that right, was not there anyway. And now in the modern day Jews, they are waiting and wanting to restart these sacrifices again. But what they keep saying, we have to get the temple rebuilt in order for them to restart these sacrifices. So they stopped with the destruction of the temple, stopped the sacrifices, and they're not going to restart them until the temple would get rebuilt. And I'm confident the temple never will be rebuilt. It cannot ever be rebuilt. That's why God had it destroyed in the first place. And then now to make sure that it's not rebuilt, He has this Muslim mosque that they call the Dome of the Rock, Temple of the Dome of the Rock or something. And that is placed right there and the Muslims are guarding that with their lives. It will cause a massive war if anyone tried to knock them out and destroy their mosque of a thing that they have there. That's right. In fact, I even saw one video here, modern day, and this was a Jew that was going around. He said there were three entrances to go into this Temple Mount area, and they had military guards, Muslim military guards, at each one of these entrance points, and they wouldn't let him in. He was a Jew. They only let the Muslims in. And so they turned him away at all three points. So he said, well, this is only for Muslims. They don't let the Jews in. So, and now we can understand they're afraid a Jew or somebody would bring a bomb in and try to blow something up. Which, there's all kinds of these things that happen from time to time in this area. So they're trying to prevent that. So we can all understand keeping them out. If I value that, I think I'd be doing the same thing. Keep out these people that are probably going to do harm. Good comments. Any other questions on this passage? We'll pick up with verse 4. And it happened as they were greatly perplexed about this, that behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. Then as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, why do you seek the living among the dead? And of course, these two men in shining garments, they are radiating light, and they're obviously angels. And they're saying to these women, why do you seek the living among the dead? Jesus is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was alive in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remember his words. Okay, so this is helping these women process, well, he told us before time, so we shouldn't be so surprised that these events actually came to pass. Kaufman's comments here are about the two men that stood by them. These were angels, as indicated by the dazzling raiment. And this, of course, is not the only time. There's several times it's recorded in Old and the New Testament about people radiating light from their bodies. The first one that I know about is Moses as he came down from Mount Sinai, and the people saw him, and he was radiating light. Then there was Jesus was radiating light on the Mount of Transfiguration, and then also the angel that appeared before John the Baptist's dad, I forgot his name right offhand, Zechariah. then he was emanating light. So Zechariah knew, and the angel told him, I'm standing in the presence of God. And so he knew that he was an angel sent from God. And then these men here are emanating light. And then Stephen says that his face shone like the face of an angel. So he had light radiating from his face. So anyway, these are the patterns of very rare instances that have happened in history that got recorded in the Old and the New Testaments. And then Kaufman continues, angels of heaven announced the resurrection of Jesus because no human eye beheld the wonder. The fact certified by the heavenly messengers here is the most important of all human history. Luke's medical training would have prejudiced him against a bodily resurrection. Yet having traced all things accurately, he was so convinced of its reality that he recorded one of the most beautiful and complete accounts of the resurrection. And about he continues about Luke, this man of science, this historian of the first rank, stands as a bulwark against those who would deny this miracle of miracles in which Jesus was declared to be the Son of God with power by his resurrection from the dead. And the resurrection is a central fact of the gospel. Any questions or comments on this passage?